Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
Why? If it ain't a clown. You know, I never found clowns that funny myself.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2008 Martin McDonagh directed movie In Bruges, which is, what, the fifth Brit comedy we've discussed in a row?
Is it the fifth one?
I think it's the fifth one. Three Cornettos, a Snatch, and an In Bruges.
Oh, yeah. Not a Snatch, just Snatch.
Well,
I think if we had discussed A Snatch, it would be a very different podcast entirely.
It would be.
Not one at all. I think I would like my mother to listen to.
Well, probably not. First of all, Drew and I last week talked about Miami Vice starring Colin Farrell. And frankly, I didn't like it. And I didn't like it mostly because Colin Farrell was channeling Guy Fieri.
Oh, God.
In his portrayal of Sonny Crockett.
That's enough to make me just want to, like, stab the television.
Yeah. So I hadn't really been thinking highly of Colin Farrell as an actor. But then I watched this movie this week, twice. And I got to tell you, I love this movie.
I did, too.
Well, did it take you by surprise what kind of movie we were watching?
It did.
It certainly did me. For reading just the blurb, which is two hitmen... have to sort of lie low in Bruges, Belgium, waiting for instructions. That's pretty much all you have in this dark comedy. Well, it's dark, and there's some hilarious things in it. But I wouldn't necessarily call it a comedy.
Yeah, I mean, this IMDb calls it a comedy crime drama.
Well, it's got drama, it's got comedy, and it has crime.
I mean, it's a dark comedy at best, but I wouldn't put its primary weight in the comedy. It's really kind of a crime drama with some comedy backbone, where Snatch was a comedy movie with some crime drama in the background.
Exactly. Yeah, Snatch was a really funny movie where Brad Pitt has a very wrenching scene because of something that happens in it.
Right.
This is a very wrenching movie with some very funny elements in it.
Yes.
Although it sneaks up on you.
This is kind of like the yang to the yin of Snatch.
Yeah, because it sneaks up on you. That's how I thought about it.
But this movie caught me by surprise. I was happily not able to predict where it was going.
Oh, not at all. In fact, if you're listening to this and you have not seen the movie In Bruges, go out, see the movie. You have to see it. It's streaming on Netflix. You can probably shoplift a copy at your local Walmart. Or maybe not. I wouldn't necessarily.
I doubt it. I doubt it's available readily on DVD. It's pretty old.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, it's 7 years old, so, you know.
Yeah. Plus, I wouldn't recommend stealing because it leads to a life of crime, which in this movie, you find that it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. The movie starts off with a little monologue, very tiny monologue. By the way, this is a very quotable movie. There are so many quotable moments in this movie. And again, you need to go watch it because we're going to spoil a lot of stuff. And I'm afraid of over-dropping quotes in, but I'll try to restrain myself.
Yeah, no, it really is. I recommend it. I mean... this will probably go somewhere in the top 20. I'll have to maybe I'll have to expand to top 30, But this really was a good, I mean, it really was a good solid film from start to finish.
Well, evidently, the director, Martin McDonagh, is something of a legendary playwright. And that's evident because it's written in a very writerly fashion.
Well, and it could very easily have been a play. I mean, it was a very small set kind of appeal.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, some of the bigger set pieces you'd have to work around, but you could, yeah, have easily done it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you would have had to have some of the big set pieces. It was, I mean, it was a, first of all, we should say, I should say, this is now a Christmas film. I'm just saying, you know, we've discussed how, like, some of our Christmas films that we watch.
Yeah.
This film is setting around Christmas.
Well, I guess.
I'm not saying it's going to be my go-to Christmas movie that I watch, but I'm just saying this gets added to the list of, you know, like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is a Christmas movie. This is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, I can see it.
And it's a very, very pretty movie. I mean, it's kind of a stunning. I don't know how pretty Bruges really is. And since most of it was actually shot on location, I'm assuming that it really is as pretty as they portray it. Cause it really is a beautiful, it was a beautiful, beautiful, just some of the scenery was just gorgeous.
Well, it's the most well-preserved medieval city in all of Europe.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Well, and that's you learn very fast, very quickly. Well, in the very beginning of a tiny little monologue, and it's Ray, Colin Farrell.
After I killed them, I dropped a gun in the Thames, washed the residue off my hands in the bathroom of a Burger King, and walked home to await instructions. Shortly thereafter, the instructions came through. Get the fuck out of London, you dumb fucks. Get to Bruges. I didn't even know where Bruges fucking was. It's in Belgium.
And that's when you see Ray, Colin Farrell, and his partner Ken, played by Brendan Gleeson, who's probably most known as Mad-Eye Moody from the Harry Potter movies, but it has been a ton of things. And they are arriving in Bruges, Belgium, on the instructions of their employer, Harry, played by Ray Fiennes. After something went wrong the last hit they did. Now, Ken is the older of the two, and he finds the city so charming and quaint. And Ray is pissed about being there from the moment they step foot off the train. He is whinging up a storm.
He's like a big glass of whinge juice, really.
Oh, he is. And it's funny because Ken is trying to find the whole, you know, he's trying to be a good tourist. And Ray is having none of it.
Ken's really trying to turn the positive out of the negative.
Yeah.
Ray just wants to find somewhere else to be because he thinks this is a hellhole of a little shitty town.
Coming up.
What's up there?
The view.
The view of what? The view down here? I can see that from down here.
Ray, you're about the worst tourist in the whole world.
Ken, I grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin. If I'd grown up on a farm and was retarded, Bruges might impress me, but I didn't, so it doesn't.
So we got Ray, Mr. Winge, and Ken, who's going to go up to the top of this tower so he can get a good view of the whole town. Well, Ray's sitting at the bottom, sort of sulking, and a guy who at first I thought was Mike McShane, so an overweight American, and his overweight wife and maybe daughter or whatever, ask him, if he's been up to the top of the tower. And Ray's like, yeah, it's rubbish. And the overweight guy says it is. The guidebook says it's a must-see.
Guidebook says it's a must-see.
Well, you lot ain't going up there.
Pardon me? Why?
I mean, it's all windy stairs. I'm not being funny.
What exactly are you trying to say?
What exactly am I trying to say? These are a bunch of fucking elephants.
Why, you... Come on, leave it, Fatty.
You know you're just the rudest man. The rudest man.
What's all that about? They're not going up there.
Hey, guys, I wouldn't go up there. It's really narrow.
Screw you, motherfucker!
And Ray is trying to be nice. He's like, I'm not kidding. I'm saying you're not going up there. It leads to a little funny bit of business, and then Ken comes down and basically says the same thing, and the woman says, screw you, motherfucker.
Yeah, but Ken has that foreshadowing where Ken's up on the top of the bell tower looking down, and he cocks his hand and points it at Ray.
Yeah, now that you're saying so, it is total foreshadowing.
Yeah, and when I saw it, I thought, no. You know, I thought, no, that would be too obvious. And, of course, as it turns out, it was totally obvious, but I was able to suspend my belief.
Yeah, well, that's good. Because we don't know what's going on yet. All we know is they're sort of stuck in Bruges, and Ken seems plenty pleased to be there, and Ray does not. And we're introduced to the hotel that they're staying at, where they find out they're staying in one room instead of two.
I thought that was kind of funny, since it's a Christmas theme. There's kind of no room at the inn.
Oh, that's, see, you're reading a lot more into it than I was.
And then, that she was the pregnant mother at the inn. And
oh, yeah, no, she's, we meet the pregnant, receptionist maybe at the hotel. Her name is Marie, played by Thecla Rutin. I'm going to mispronounce all these names.
Marie could have been Mary.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
there's a little bit of, and I don't know if it's, I don't know how much to read into it, but I read into it a lot.
Yeah, well, it's good. I didn't read any of this into there. But let me tell you, I thought all of the women in this movie, with the exception of maybe the prostitutes, were so freaking cute and like adorable sort of cute. And anyway, so that's when they go to the first pub and Ken's sitting down and Ray brings in a beer for himself and a beer for Ken and says, one gay beer for my gay friend and one normal beer for me because I am normal.
I wrote the same lines down.
Yeah, so it's completely believable that Ken is gay. And yet, as it turns out, he had been married in the past. So is Ken gay or is Ray just kind of taking the piss?
Yeah, Ray's giving him a hard time because he wants to be altruisty, and he considers that to be kind of gay.
Okay, so that's because literally, Ken is much more refined and is kind of an older gentleman happy to sightsee. And for some reason, maybe I just thought, maybe he's gay.
He's really almost the father figure.
Oh, totally. Well, and, again, I didn't realize that this hit thing that just went bad, it was Ray's first job.
Well, they discussed that later.
Yeah. Well, no, now I know, now that I live in the future with you too. So they're staying and Ray's like, how long do we have to stay here? And Ken is like, if we get a call tonight, we get a call tonight. And if it takes 2 weeks, we'll be here 2 weeks. And Ray's like, no. So Ray convinces Ken to go out that night. And they kind of both decided that Harry's probably not going to call that night. So Ray says, well, all those beautiful sights you're talking about? They probably look even better with the lights on, at nighttime. So they all go out. And they happen upon this film shoot. And Ray's like, oh, they're filming midgets. That's where we meet the midget, Jordan Prentice. And that's where Ray sees the lovely Chloe.
And makes his first, her Baby Alicia's reference.
Oh, yes, yes. He's trying to chat up Chloe. He was a production assistant on the set of this Dutch film. And so Ray's gets past security into the craft service area and pours himself a cup of coffee and is going to talk to Chloe. And that's where his small talk consists of a lot of midgets tend to kill themselves.
Yeah, that's his opening volley.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it turns out Ray doesn't have much game. He's very cute. And he's got great expressions. The same expressions I hated in Miami Vice are adorable in this movie. Like all of his eyebrow work.
And he kind of has this irreverent pre-adolescent 8-year-old boy stupidity look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So he chats up Chloe and ends up getting a date for the next night. And he gets back to the hotel and Ken's already there. And Ken's found out that Harry's left a message for them. And it's a very sweary message. and it's rude, and he talks about having to leave a message with a fucking receptionist, and the message is in handwriting. It says, P.S. I'm not a receptionist. I'm the co-owner of the hotel. So Ken bumps into Marie later and says, I'm sorry about the message last night. The man who left it is a bit of a, well, he's a bit of a, and Marie's like, cock? Yes, a bit of a cock.
And she laughs.
Yes. So that's what I love about the ladies in this movie is that they're adorable, and yet they're not like,
they're not shrinking violets.
No, no. Nor are they naive.
They're all very strong women.
Yeah. So Ray is happy that he at least has a date for the next night. And Ken is like, well, we're not going out. And Ray's like, well, only one of us really has to stay for the phone call, right? And Ken's like, well, okay. But if you're going to go out on your date and I have to stay home, then we're going to do what we want to do this morning. And that's when they, Ray says, fine, yeah, no problem. But he's still, as Ken puts it, he's throwing a fucking moody like a 5-year-old who's dropped all his sweets. And he's unimpressed even by the drops of Jesus Christ's blood, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
It was a little crazy.
Yeah, so while Ken is actually, at the Basilica of the Holy Blood, looking at ancient artifacts, Ray, because he doesn't have to, is outside. But he has a flashback to when, we don't realize it's a flashback at first, but he's sitting in a confessional and he's confessing to a priest that he kills people for money. And the priest is like, who did you kill for money? And Ray says, you. And then proceeds to shoot the priest to death.
I have to admit that at this point in the movie, it caught me completely. I was gobsmacked because at first I thought, I didn't realize it was a flashback, and I don't know if you had the same experience I did.
Exactly, yeah. There's no way to know it's a flashback.
So I thought he was actually giving his confession to doing the shooting.
Yes.
And so I thought, wow, the Irish Catholics in other countries are like, could they really get away with that? I mean, could you really confess to murder and expect not to get turned in? And you know, in America, you don't have that luxury because supposedly. So it was a shocking, jarring scene when he says you, and I was like, oh, no.
Well, and I was a little bit surprised because the guy who plays the priest, uncredited in the movie, by the way, is also plays a big part in Miami Vice. Yeah, he's the main FBI guy.
Trails, pal.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But yeah, it's he plays the FBI guy. So it's a weird thing. But then we get a conversation between Ken and Ray about the fact that they are hitmen and they have done bad things. That just kind of gives you the relationship between Ken and Ray.
Right. They have very different philosophies. You know, Ken is a very proper hitman, where Ray is kind of, well, it's his first time.
Well,
but We skipped past the part where the shooting of the priest doesn't really go as Ray planned.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We forgot the important part of that killing the priest thing.
The most integral part is that he doesn't manage to kill the priest outright. And so the priest ends up fleeing from the confessional into his, I assume it's his private rectory or whatever it is. And Ray keeps shooting him, you know, to try and get to kill him. And because the priest is running and his back is to Ray, Ray is shooting him in the back. And then we get to the most jarring scene of the movie to me, which I didn't see coming at all, which is where we see that because, you know, Ray has shot him, he shot through the priest and he's shot a little boy dead in the head, which, I mean, I didn't expect that at all. I didn't see that coming in any way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You don't see a lot of comedies where you shoot a kid dead in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
I don't know. I don't know what I believe.
The things you're taught as a child, they never really leave you, do they? So, like, I believe in trying to lead a good life. Like if it's an old lady carrying her shopping home. Well, I don't try and help her carry her shopping. I don't go that far, but I certainly hold the door open for her and that, and let her go out before me.
Yeah, and anyway, if you try to help her carry her shopping, she'd probably think you were just trying to nick her shopping.
Exactly.
This is the world we live in today.
At the same time, at the same time as trying to lead a good life, I have to reconcile myself with the fact that, yes, I have killed people. Not many people. Most of them are not very nice people. Apart from one person.
Who's that?
This fella, Danny Alaban's brother. He's just trying to protect his brother. Like you or I would. Just a lollipop man. He came at me with a bottle. What are you going to do? Shot him down.
In my book, though. Sorry. Someone comes at you with a bottle. That is a deadly weapon. He's got to take the consequences.
I know that in my heart. I also know that he's just trying to protect his brother, you know.
I know. But a bottle, that can kill you. It's a case of it's you or him. If he come at you with his bare hands, that'd be different. And that wouldn't have been fair.
Well, technically, your bare hands can kill somebody too. They can be deadly weapons too. I mean, what if you knew karate, say?
You said he was a lollipop man.
He was a lollipop man.
What's a lollipop man doing on fucking karate?
I'm just saying.
How old was he?
About 50.
What's a 50-year-old lollipop man doing on fucking karate? What was he, a Chinese lollipop man? Jesus, Ken. I'm trying to talk about...
I know what you're trying to talk about.
Killed a little boy. You keep bringing up a fucking lollipop, man.
You didn't mean to kill a little boy.
I know I didn't mean to. But because of the choices I made and the course that I put into action, a little boy isn't here anymore. And he'll never be here again. I mean here in the world, not here in Belgium. Well, he'll never be here in Belgium either, will he? I mean, he might have wanted to come here when he got older. Don't know why. And that's all because of me. He's dead because of me. And I'm trying to get my head around it, but I can't. I will always have killed that little boy. That ain't ever going away. Ever. Unless, maybe I go away.
Don't even think like that.
You know, you said it right. You said it absolutely correctly before. As far as the relationship between Ken and Ray is a father-son relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ken knows that Ray has screwed up something fierce.
I would have called it mentors, but I think that Ken really has a kind of an affection for Ray.
Well, as we find out just a little bit later, because this happened and it was his first time, you know, Ray still is young enough and he doesn't have, you know, he still has a chance of redemption left where Ken doesn't. And we get into that a little bit later when Ken and Harry have a nice little conversation. But Ray... you know, he's still a young guy. So even though he's having this conflict, because he did kill a little kid, he still wants to go on this date with Chloe, because Chloe is quite fetching. So they go to a fancy restaurant. And Chloe...
So what do you do, Raymond?
I shoot people for money.
What kinds of people?
Priests, children, you know, the usual.
Is there a lot of money to be made in that line of business?
There isn't priests, there isn't any children. So what is it you do, Chloe?
I sell cocaine and heroin to Belgian film crews.
Do you?
Do I look like I do?
You do, actually. Do I look like I shoot people?
No. Just children.
Mm-hmm. I saw your midget today. Little prick didn't even say hello.
Well, he's on a lot of ketamine.
What's that?
Horse tranquilizer.
A horse tranquilizer? Where'd you get that?
I sold it to him.
You can't sell horse tranquilizers to a midget.
This movie, I think it's going to be a very good one. There's never been a classic movie made in Bruges until now.
Of course there hasn't. It's a shithole.
Which is my hometown, right?
Well, it's still a shithole.
It's not a shithole.
What? Even midgets have to take drugs to stick it.
Okay. So, we've insulted my hometown. You're doing very well, Raymond. Why don't you tell me some Belgian jokes while you're at it?
Don't know any Belgian jokes. And if I did, I think I'd have the good sense not to... Hey, hang on. Is Belgium where there are all those child abuse murders leading? And I do know a Belgian joke. What's Belgium famous for? Chocolates and child abuse, and they only invented the chocolates to get to the kids. What?
One of the girls they murdered was a friend of mine.
Sorry, Chloe.
One of the girls they murdered wasn't a friend of mine. I just wanted to make you feel bad. It worked quite well.
It's a brilliant set of dialogue, it really is.
Oh, it's the dialogue is so great. He's insulted her hometown. And she tells him to tell her a Belgian joke. And that goes horribly.
Yeah, no, the joke was, I laughed inappropriately, but I laughed nonetheless. It was funny.
And then she played it so well because she feigned like her feelings were hurt. So they're both kind of weirdo people. Oh, by the way, it's worth noting that they're in the smoking section of a restaurant, and so she's smoking while they're having their little small talk between them, and it's irritating this guy in the next table. So when she goes off to the ladies, the guy in the next table keeps saying, like, unbelievable. So Ray says, what's unbelievable? And the guy, played by Zelko Ivanek, Homicide: Life in the Streets.
He's in so many things.
Oh, he was in the 2004 Manchurian Candidate.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. So he goes off and he's like she's blowing smoke right in my face. He's like, this is a smoking section. Well, I don't care. She's blowing it right in my face. I don't want to die just because of her fucking arrogance. And that's what Ray says. Uh-huh. Is that what the Vietnamese used to say? And he's like, what are you talking about? Ray ends up punching out the guy at the table. He presumes to be an American. And then he turns around and the guy's girlfriend swings a bottle at him. So he has to punch her out too. And then they have to leave the restaurant. And he's like, oh, I don't hit women. I just hit women. I only hit a woman if she's going to hit me with a bottle or if she knows karate. Luckily, though, she sort of forgives him or is still interested in him. So they end up going back to her place. In the meantime, we go back to the hotel and Ken receives the call from Harry. And this is after the comedy of the Chloe Ray dinner. We have the drama of Ken and Harry's phone call because Harry tells Ken where to go get the gun and asks him if he likes, you know, if he likes Bruges, whether Ray is enjoying it. Ken's like, oh, yeah, he loves it. Well, it's a good thing because I wanted to give Ray one last beautiful memory before, you know, you have to kill him. And it's an interesting scene because they in the trivia, it talks about how they're playing the Orson Welles Touch of Evil on the television when Ken gets the phone call. And from that point on, the entire scene, much like in Touch of Evil, is all one shot of the entire phone call. And it's a wrenching shot because Ken does not expect to have to go kill Ray, and yet it is his job. So he's got a lot of turmoil going on. So he goes down to the bar. Then we cut back to Chloe and Ray in Chloe's apartment. And that's when Chloe's ex-boyfriend, Eric, played by Jeremy Renier, who's got like a shaved head and looks like a skinhead, appears and brandishes a handgun. And Ray disarms him. And at that point, Chloe is like, Like, there's just blanks in that gun. So Ray shoots, like, at something in the thing, realizes that it's really blanks. And so when Eric grabs a knife and kind of goes at him, Ray just shoots him in the face with the blanks.
In kind of this very nonchalant, like, of course this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm blind. Well, of course you're blind. I shot you in the face with blanks. Like, I'm not going to let you stab me. What are you talking about?
It was cause and effect, kind of like, of course you're blind. I shot you with the, like, yeah. Like, duh.
And, you know, so Eric is blind and crying and needs to go to the hospital. And Chloe's like, he's my ex-boyfriend. We used to rob tourists together. So sorry about this whole thing. You know, I got to take him to the hospital, but you can stay at the apartment. I'll be back later. And Ray's like, okay. And he starts poking around. And then we cut to Ken at the bar, totally drowning his sorrows and feeling horrible because of what he's got to do the next day. But then Ray walks into the bar.
Hey, ho. Drowning your sorrows, huh?
What sorrows?
You know, being a sad old ugly little man. One gay beer, please.
How'd your date go?
My date involved two instances of extreme violence. One instance of her hand on my cock and my finger up her thing, which lasted all too briefly. Not always the way. One instance of me stealing 5 grams of a very high quality cocaine, and one instance of me blinding a puffy little skinhead. So all in all, my even pretty much balanced out fine.
You got 5 grams of coke?
I got 4 grams on me and 1 gram in me, which is why my heart is going like the clappers as if I'm about to have a heart attack. So if I collapse any minute now, please remember to tell the doctors that it might have something to do with the coke.
Give us a gram then.
I thought you were laying off because it makes you the breath.
You know what? Right now I don't really give a fuck.
And that whole, that just, like, Ray just doesn't get it.
And yet, it's beautiful. It's like a child's innocence. And Ken is like, oh, you got some of that cocaine for me because I'm having a bad night. I need some of that too. And that's when they bump into Jimmy, the midget. Well, he'd prefer to be called the dwarf. And Jimmy is awesome because he comes off like a little shit. But it turns out he was on a very strong horse tranquilizer today. And he was, you know, he wasn't waving to anybody except maybe to a horse. That's when we find out that Jimmy is there with the prostitute. So there's another prostitute there. And so the five of them all go up to a hotel room and share some cocaine. And Jimmy starts talking about the coming race war, which is hysterical.
Well, it was. Yeah, because they're, it's very Manson-esque.
Oh, yeah, he's just talking all this, how this coming race war, and Ray's, like, just asking genuine questions. And Ken is like, look, you know, I was married to a black woman, and she was killed by a white man. So which side do you think I'm going to have to fight on? And it's so, anyway, they just leave Jimmy there thinking he's a racist, so we're hitmen, but we have standards. We have to get out of here. So they go back to the hotel, and Ken leaves before Ray gets up because Ken's got to go get the handgun from Yuri, the contact there.
That's when you get to see Ray waking up, and Ray does this thing repeatedly throughout the movie where he has this kind of this tick where he rolls 3 fingers over his face. He did it repeatedly in the movie, and I don't know if it's a Colin Farrellism or if it was a Rayism.
I'll have to look for it. So but it's
there's a couple points where he's like, he's got his 3 fingers, his 3 middle fingers of his hand, and he's like, he's got them over his lips, he's got them kind of over his eyes a little bit, over his face, and as he's waking up in the hotel that morning, it was really obvious where he's like, you see the tear rolling down his eye, and then he kind of does that thing with his fingers, and then he gets up.
Hmm. Well, the one thing that I hadn't mentioned was that in addition to the gun that Ray kept from Chloe's apartment that had blanks in it, they also had some actual live cartridges there. So he had a handful of those. So now he's got a gun with live ammunition in it. And as Ken is going out to get the gun that he's going to have to use to kill Ray, Ray is going to a park where there are children, and he is going to shoot himself. And that's a heart-wrenching scene. And the only way they cut this tension is the fact that Ken is coming up to shoot Ray, and then Ray takes out the gun, and Ken's like, no, you can't shoot yourself. And then Ray figures out, wait, you're going to shoot me.
Yeah, I kind of had this moment like, what are you doing? Like, Ken, what are you doing? You're stupid. Like, you just traded one devil for the other.
Oh, yeah. Well, but Ken can't let him kill himself. And yet, you're right. As Harry points out later, if Ken had just let Ray shoot himself, then everybody would have been happy.
Yeah, and I actually wrote down, I made a point to write this down. I thought, this is kind of an existential Irish Catholic crisis. Because if killing is wrong and he kills himself, you know, having killed somebody, that's also wrong. But then having somebody kill somebody who was going to kill themselves, you know, it's like this whole cycle of crazy.
Well, and as Ken very nicely points out to Ray, you know, look, you know, you killed the 5-year-old and that's a horrible thing, but you can't undo it. What you can do is save the next 5-year-old. You still have opportunity to redeem yourself. So I'm going to take your gun away from you, and I'm going to put you aboard a train, and I don't want to know where you end up. You know, you were to go out and fly right, and if you kill yourself in 2 weeks, that's your business. But for right now, you need to get away from here and realize that, you know, you have an opportunity to be a better person, or at least to do better. And so Ken puts Ray on a train. No problem at all. And I mean, Ray's not very happy about it because he's still going to be suicidal. But Ken's like, fine, I'll be suicidal later. And then Ken calls Harry and says, here's what happened. And, you know, I realize you're not going to like that. And if you need to do something about it, you know where I'm going to be. And then hangs up. So then Harry, Ray finds, needs to immediately go to Bruges to deal with Ken. And again, all of this would have been fine, except Ray is on this train, and suddenly the train stops, and a policeman is walking down the corridor in the train, and looks at Ray and says, are you Irish? And he goes, yeah. What's your name? And he's like, making up a name. Yeah. And the policeman's like, you eat the Canadian. What?
I wrote down, eat the Canadian.
Yeah, he says, I eat the Canadian? I don't know what you're talking about. And then you see that the people he thought were...
It was crazy because the crazy conductor guy or the policeman, I guess he's a policeman, right?
Yeah.
It was so just crazy. Like, I don't know. It didn't sound like a Belgian accent. It didn't sound like a French accent. So I don't know what nationality he was, but he was, you know, heat the Canadian. And I was just like, he sounds Russian.
Yeah, well, it was hilarious because, of course, Ray thought the guy that he punched out in the restaurant was an American.
Was American.
Which is fine, because that's why he mentioned Vietnam and all that. Turns out it was a Canadian. He's like, oh, shit, I can't believe he's Canadian. No wonder he's mad.
Yeah.
I mean, Ray's like, oh, well, crap, of course. Yeah, okay, fine. And so he goes to jail, and Chloe bails him out. He's very grateful to Chloe. He's like, you know, oh, you know, thank you for bailing me out. She's like, oh, it's okay. I'll repay you. No, that's okay. I'll also repay you for the coke and ecstasy that I stole from you. Or no, from the LSD and ecstasy. And she turns to the policeman because they're still in the police station. It's like, funny American humor.
I think she's English or British humor.
Oh, maybe British. Yeah, I'm sorry. British humor. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a British humor.
So then they go out and they're sharing a drink. In the market square, beneath the belfry. And that's when Ken is also having a drink and expecting Harry to show up. And Harry shows up, and both Ken and Harry are armed. And both of them know that because Ray is gone, Ken's going to have to pay for what Ray did. So they decide to go up to the top of the tower that were in the beginning of the movie. And that way there's nobody around.
By the way, because Ken really kind of readily gives up his life for Ray. He really does expect just to sacrifice himself for Ray.
Well, and we don't even know to the extent of it until after they get to the top of the tower. But before they get to the top, they are met with the Belgian guy who runs
Naughty ticket taker.
Yes. And the nice thing about Harry is, Harry proves to be something of a badass, ruthless guy with the way he takes care of the ticket taker.
He will let you bury yourself, and then he will bury you proper.
Yeah, it's so.
Because there's a whole scene where the ticket taper is like thumping him in the head.
Oh yeah.
I thought. First of all, nobody would do that. I mean, nobody would do that. I can't imagine, especially in Europe. Like, would some guy really thump some other guy in the head? That just seems like so, like, way over the top. And like in America, you would not get your thumb back.
Well, except that, of course, you know, the ticket taker is like a half a head taller than Harry.
I suppose.
So, you know, he's not suffering fools. What he doesn't realize is that Harry is not a fool. Harry.
Well, and after watching Harry destroy the telephone in the scene when he's at his house, watching the ticket taker thump him in the head, I was just like, oh no, this will end badly for everyone.
Yeah, we know how this is going to go. Yeah. So they go up to the top of the tower. And of course, you know, Chloe and Ray are down below, unaware this is happening. And Ken and Harry are at the top of the tower, not knowing that they're down there. And, you know, Ken tells Harry, look, I know what you got to do, but you know what? I'm not going to fight you.
What are you doing? What are you fucking doing?
I'm not fighting anymore, Harry.
All right, then I'm blowing your fucking head off. Oh, don't come over all Gandhi. What are you fucking doing? Ken, stop messing about, please. Pick up your gun. I know I'm going to beat you anyway because you're a spaz, but...
Harry. I'm totally in your debt. Things that have gone between us in the past. I love you unreservedly for all that. For your integrity. For your honor. I love you. The boy had to be let go. The boy had to be given a chance. I have to do that. I had to say, fuck you. And fuck what I owe you. And fuck everything that's going on between us. And that's what I had to do. But I'm not fighting you. And I accept totally everything you've got to do. I accept it. Totally.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you say all that fucking stuff, I can't fucking shoot you now, can I?
It's entirely up to you, Harry. It's entirely your call. All I'm saying is, I'm not fighting.
Nothing to you, just because you're standing about like Robert fucking Powell.
Like who?
Like Robert fucking Powell, like of Jesus, the fucking Nazareth.
My fucking leg.
So you think they're gonna hug it out, except that you know, Harry's like, he had to pay, so he shoots him in the leg, which is hilarious.
Well, it's kind of funny.
Oh, it's hysterical.
Like, what, you didn't think I was gonna let you get off free, did you?
Yeah, but he's gonna help him down the winding staircase of the tower.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, Eric, who now is blind in one eye, he has already seen Harry, and he knows of the relationship because he's met Harry before when Harry goes to get his guns from the same guy, from Yuri, the same guy that Ken did. And so he knows why Harry's there. So when he sees Ray, he runs up the tower to tattle. And realizing, you know, when Ken realizes that Harry is not going to go and try to kill Ray anyway, they have this brief fight where Harry shoots Ken in the neck in a really brutal, you know, scene. Like, he's mortally wounded.
Yeah.
And Harry's going to run down and take care of Ray. And so Ken decides he's going to run up to the top of the tower. And he gets up to the top, and the fog that they had talked about earlier is now descended, and he can't see anything through the fog, so he couldn't take a shot like he foreshadowed he might do earlier. So he does what I didn't expect him to do.
I didn't expect it either. And so as he's pulling out the change and he's dropping the change down from which is the change, by the way, that the ticket taker wouldn't take because he was like a 5 shillings too short or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know what the euro cent equivalent is.
Yeah.
But he didn't have 5 euros. He had 4.95, and the guy wouldn't, or 4.90, I think he was a dime short. But I didn't expect, so he's plinking the coins down. At first I thought, oh, well, he's trying to get people's attention because I figured there's more witnesses. Maybe there won't be, maybe Harry's not going to shoot people in a crowd of people.
Yeah. Well, he was trying to get their attention. All right.
Oh yeah. Well, and then as he starts crawling up over the threshold, I thought, oh no, he's just going to pull a jumper.
Yeah. And that he tucks his gun in his inside coat pocket and he just jumps and he lands in a brutal, nasty fashion.
It is amazing. It was an amazing, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it was gruesome.
Like, doesn't one of his arms just come off?
Yes.
Yeah. And Ray sees that it happened and covers Chloe's eyes and then realizes who it is and runs over there. And poor Ken. Ken is like, take my gun. And so Ray reaches inside his coat and the gun is trash because it's just fallen off of a tower.
Yeah.
And they're trying to have, Ray's trying to have some meaningful conversation and Ken's like, I'm going to die now. And that's where you have this foot pursuit between Harry and Ray that they all end up back at the hotel with the very pregnant Marie. Keeping Harry from going up to have a shootout inside the hotel.
Yeah, but this was kind of one of the weird parts of this movie. Like, Harry's running through the streets of Bruges just brandishing a gun.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, nobody seems to, like nobody's really paying any attention.
Now, at this point, has Ray been shot already?
Not yet.
Okay, because
he doesn't get shot until after he escapes the hotel room.
Yeah, okay, so they have this little conversation between Marie. Harry's at the bottom of the stairs, Ray at the top of the stairs. They both have guns, and Ray proposes an idea. He's like, well, my room faces out the canal, and I'm going to go back up to the room, jump into the canal, see if I can swim to the other side and escape. And you go outside, you can shoot me from there and try to get me. That way we'll leave this lady and her baby out of the whole thing. And Harry's like, well, you completely promised to jump into the canal. I don't want you to come run back in here and find you hiding in a cupboard.
And Marie really, she's like, you guys are both crazy.
Yeah, she says as much.
Yes.
Yeah. So Ray jumps into the river, but lands actually on a little boat. But Harry's an amazingly good shot and shoots Ray and, shoots him in the abdomen, but Ray's able to keep running and they end up, stumbling onto a film set. And by the way, they had seen the film set earlier in the night because they meet up with Jimmy the Midget again, who, when he about the racist thing, he's just like, oh, that was just the cocaine talking, man. Don't worry about that. But he's dressed up like a schoolboy for this dream sequence. And that's the part I should have saw coming, but didn't.
I didn't see it coming either.
Where Harry ends up shooting Ray 3 more times in the back through his body. But one of the bullets, which we've already determined is a hollow point bullet, kills the dwarf actor, basically takes his head off.
Yeah.
And so yeah. Harry sees this dwarf's body dressed in like schoolboy clothing. And he's already had this conversation about how if you kill a child, you have to kill yourself. That's what I would have done. That's why Ray has got it coming. So Harry kills himself. And you know what? Hang on just a second.
I will just take this interlude to point out that the score in the closing of this movie was a piano score, and it only had 6 notes, and it was still 1,000 times better than the 2-note Eyes Wide Shut. So if you're listening now, go listen to the closing, and is this a so much better version of 6 piano notes? You're welcome.
Sorry, I'm going to stop right at the most climactic scene of the whole fucking movie.
That's okay. And let's do an Easter egg. So you will laugh when you're editing now.
Okay. Excellent. Okay.
But I want to point out that as Ray approaches the movie set, I don't know if you realize this, but Ray is actually entered the painting from the museum.
From the Hieronymus Bosch painting?
Yes. Where he and Ken are discussing, you know, well, what's this painting? And it's the painting Ray likes. And Ken's like, well, it's the end of the world. You know, everything is this calamitous and it's kind of all crazy and it's Judgment Day and all that. But all of kind of the carnival setting and all the crazy, the masks and everything that's going on, like Ray has entered that painting.
You're absolutely right. And so, you know, Harry shoots Ray and then looks and sees Ray is falling down. But behind him is the dwarf who's dead in a school children's outfit.
And Ray does try to say, no, he's not. But it's not what you think.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You know, Harry lives by a code. So Harry shoots himself. And so Ray is gravely wounded, okay? So he's being lifted up into an ambulance. And he sees Marie and Eric and Chloe. And he has this little monologue at the end.
There's a Christmas tree somewhere in London with a bunch of presents underneath it. That'll never be opened. And I thought, if I survive all this, I'll go to that house, apologize to the mother there, and accept whatever punishment she chose for me. Prison, death, didn't matter. Because at least in prison and at least in death, you know, I wouldn't be in fucking Bruges. But then, like a flash, it came to me. And I realized, fuck, man. Maybe that's what hell is. The entire rest of eternity spent in fucking Bruges. And I really, really hoped I wouldn't die. I really, really hoped I wouldn't die.
So what's hilarious is they never let Bruges off the hook the entire movie.
No.
And so it's a very funny movie, but it is so dark.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's a very dark subject matter. I mean, you know, killing a little kid.
Yeah. And I guess it has elements of another play. In fact, the names they check into in the hotel are the main characters of the play that they're kind of alluding to. But like Chloe says, it's not really an homage or a pastiche. It's kind of a, and then I never copied or never heard what word she was actually using.
Yeah, I got that too. I laughed.
But yeah, that's what Ray, because Ray has just asked her whether she speaks English, and then she realizes, oh, maybe she speaks English too well.
It's kind of patronizing way.
But there was not one performer in this movie that didn't give a freaking outstanding job.
No, and there wasn't any throwaway dialogue either.
Oh, yeah, it all works. It's all very tightly written. It's all very well acted. Even Colin Farrell's like eyebrow maneuvers, like I said, they actually work for Anguish, where they just were so over the top, maybe because of his hairstyle in Miami Vice. He just looked like Guy Fieri in Miami Vice.
Oh God.
But in this movie he looks like a young, you know, really like heart-wrenching kind of guy who's got real troubles.
Yeah.
And he's all pretty matter of fact about it. Even when, you know, he's punching out the guy who turns out to be Canadian, or, you know, telling the fat guy he really shouldn't be going up in that tower, or he's not going to be able to anyway. He seems very earnest. He's not, you know, he's not doing it to be a wise ass.
He's not really doing it out of meanness. He's just doing it because he needs to.
Yeah. And it's just him. I mean, you know, that's just, he's guileless. He even tells her, look, I kill priests and small children.
Yeah. But some of this, you know, there's some of the small dialogue that's just, the non sequiturs in this movie are kind of funny too. Like when Harry goes to Yuri and he's recounting the conversation that Yuri had with Ken about, you know, alcoves versus nooks and crannies, which is like, alcove? Alcove. I don't think alcove. Alcove. Is this alcove? Is this correct? I was dying.
Well, and the fact that I love how Harry dealt with Eric, who is now blind in one eye.
Yeah, it's like your own fault.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, if you were in such a, if you're in such a poof, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was really happy that this got on the list.
This movie didn't do very well, though. It cost $15 billion. Yeah.
Oh, it did horribly then.
$15 million to make, but it only made $7.7 domestic.
Oh, that's not good. It's a great movie.
It really is. Well, it won a bunch of awards, but not in America.
Yeah, well, I can see that.
It won, like, the best Irish screenplay of the year.
Well, like I said, I think the director is something of a...
prodigy.
Well, like a playwright hero over there.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty serious. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com. Or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.